This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. This hour, some thoughts about Afghanistan's future and its past.
Like another world when I see it on the television. Afghanistan. It doesn't bear any resemblance to the country that I visited in the 70s.
The magical archaeology of YouTube. Australians here reminiscing about being tourists in Afghanistan back in the 1970s.
Afghanistan in the early 70s had a great highway system running through it. So driving through it, you drove on these like perfect roads through the most exquisite scenery, the terrain of Afghanistan, high altitude desert, beautiful mountains over in the distance.
Is the future of Afghanistan this travelogue or the horrible deprivation now coupled with this week's earthquake, which further sets back the country that has seen 30 years of war? Continued fighting has created more misery around the city of Kunduz, retaken from the Taliban a few weeks back. And President Obama has decided to leave a force of 5,500 Americans in the country until 2017. But boots on the ground aren't the only things left behind by 14 years of the U.S. and NATO-led war. Rebuilt infrastructure and airfields built over the last decade by American and NATO forces, are they useful to civilian entrepreneurs? Afghan government advisor Daoud Sultanzoy says yes. He's chairman of the Afghan Airfields Economic Development Commission, trying to make the airfields, now the property of the Afghan government, a bootstrap for national development.
The infrastructure has been built in the past 13 years. These are billions of dollars of investment. And if it's taken advantage of in a commercial fashion, this can be a real economic driver for not just Afghanistan, for the whole region, because there are several huge bases. There are tens of square miles of facilities in some of them. And there are huge opportunities, both in terms of commercial operation for Afghanistan and transit operation for the rest of the region, and turning them into a logistic capability that will be a historic economic beginning for this region, I think.
With Afghanistan still in a civil war state, with the Taliban fighting the government right now, at what level you can characterize for me if you like, it would seem that commercial air travel and normal air travel, regardless of the condition of the airports, might be a dubious proposition. What do you say?
I think the perception would probably say so, but the reality is that if you compare this to other things that human beings have done, for example, the Americans who went to the West, had they considered the West as a dangerous region, the West would still be the Wild West. So I think in order to take one major factor of insecurity away from Afghanistan, which is poverty, which is lack of opportunities, which is unemployment, this exactly would mean the opposite. This, we are, I think, on the threshold of a new beginning in this region, and Afghanistan is in the center of it, because Afghanistan sits on trillions of dollars of natural resources. Not to mention its water and agriculture capabilities, hydroelectric and other capabilities that can send energy to South Asia, which is hungry for resources, to China, which is hungry for resources, and beyond. And also the Central Asian and South Asian connection requires Afghanistan to be a bridge between all these countries. And naturally, as we are talking, Turkmenistan is embarking on building a huge pipeline which is worth almost $10 billion, which is called TAPI, which is Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, sending natural gas to India and Pakistan. So all these things considered, keen-eyed investors should look at Afghanistan as a new frontier for opportunities. And I think this is the beginning. And this would create opportunities that would negate the void that has existed for insecurity to come and incubate itself.
How does an airfield reduce poverty for somewhere, thousands, hundreds of miles away? And why would the airfields do anything besides make it easier for the opium crop to get delivered to market?
Well, I think on the contrary, if you provide opportunities in these zones, which we will call special economic zones, that would be developed in each airfield. We will not be looking at them as just airfields. The airfield will be a component of a much bigger machinery of economic vitality, where we will provide financial services, we'll provide agro businesses, we'll provide light industry, medium-sized industries, and we will embark on new mining adventure that Afghanistan offers for investors. And the opium and drug issue would completely leave its seat for much easier ways to create income. And let's not forget, the drug business in Afghanistan is not producing the income that the world is measuring. Most of the income is produced outside Afghanistan. If we can provide our farmers to grow cotton where textile industry can grow, or export cottons from here, or other agricultural-related products, they would rather have more value-added incomes from those things than just a meager income from growing poppies where the profits are made elsewhere outside Afghanistan. The smugglers in Central Asia and Russia and Europe are making a lot of money, but the Afghan farmers, if we can find a substitute for them, they will be very, very glad to move to that substitute.
The security for these airfields is going to be financed by the United States, or is that going to be from the Afghans? I've heard it's a $5 billion price tag.
No, actually, the security will not be financed by the United States. One reason we are very interested in offering this to commercial use is that each commercial user and vendor and tenant will be participating in the process, and we will provide security through a very, very meticulous and elaborate system that the Afghan government will support, and the international community will also be behind it, but the expenses will not be paid by the United States.
Tourists in Afghanistan, Daoud, really?
Really, really. You know, if you look at our history in the 60s and 70s when I was growing up, we had 8 flights a week to Paris, full, booked for 6-7 months. We had daily flights to Frankfurt. We had daily flights to Amsterdam. We had flights to London. We had flights to Rome. We had flights to Istanbul and Beirut and other countries in the Middle East and Far East and South Asia. And they were all coming to Afghanistan. In fact, Bamiyan, which has the highest statues of Buddha there, was a subject of discussion with the Japanese, that they were thinking of sending hundreds of thousands of people every year. That is a true possibility, and we are going to be working on that. Afghanistan is a landlocked country, so these airports, the same way that the United States economy is driven by transportation and by mobility, these airports will become the machines of mobility in Afghanistan, and I think this would be a true reality, and tourism will be a part of it, definitely.
Daoud Sultanzoy is a senior advisor to the president of Afghanistan and chairman of the Afghan Airfields Economic Development Commission. He spoke to us from Kabul. Daoud, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Well, what is the realistic potential for investment in the Afghan economy, notwithstanding the enthusiasm of our previous guest, Mr. Sultanzoy? The track record of the past 14 years has been to spend $110 billion in reconstruction money that has gone largely to waste, by some arguments. John Sopko has served as Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction since 2012. Mr. Sopko, what do you think the investment potential is for the Afghan economy, and can you jumpstart it with what's been built with the $110 billion, including NATO airfields, in the last 14 years?
Well, we're hopeful you can build the economy. That's what needs to be done. There needs to be a chance for viability of the state. Right now, the Afghan people cannot afford the government we have helped create for them. They need to raise more income. They need to build the economy. I'm cautiously optimistic about the new government. I'm also cautiously optimistic about the proposal that came from General Semenite at CSTICA, which is our Combined Security Transition Command Afghanistan. He thinks out of the box. This is a novel proposal, but it faces a lot of difficulties. The biggest one is security. No one's going to invest if you're being shot at. The second difficult situation you're dealing with is the corruption. Serious problem. Nobody's going to invest faced with such endemic corruption. So these are all things that make investment so difficult. Unfortunately, our government has not had a pretty good track record in helping the Afghans build that economy. Ironically, the two best economic successes in Afghanistan, our government had absolutely nothing to do with. One was illegal, that's narcotics. The largest export is illegal drugs. And obviously our government had nothing to do with that, although we spent $8 billion trying to stop it. And the other one is telecom, which I've spoken to senior business officials, businessmen in the telecom industry, and they said the U.S. government had absolutely nothing to do with that success.
Some of the investors suggest that if an alternative to narcotics does materialize, that using these airfields, that other agricultural commodities could be exported to areas in South Asia more easily. Do you think that's a prospect that is reasonable or ridiculous?
Well, I don't think it's ridiculous, but and I think it's reasonable. But again, you have to overcome those problems of security, transparency, corruption, the whole illegality of many of the ministries, which the new unity government's trying to do something about. But the test will really be if private sector, the private investors, are willing to take that risk.
Can you envision a return to the 1970s, the period of tourism and kind of adventure tourism that was associated with Afghanistan? It didn't make enormous amounts of money, but it certainly existed at a time when, while there was more stability in Afghanistan, it was still a tribally run government, a tribally run nation. Can you envision anything like that returning in the near term to Afghanistan?
You know, hope springs eternally. Well, you would hope for something like that, but I don't think you can go back to the 1970s anywhere. Let's deal with the reality. It's not just Afghanistan, and there are beautiful people there, and it's beautiful countryside. I travel over it, and many times I look down from helicopters or airplanes, and I say, God, this would be a beautiful place to ski, to hike, if only they'd stop shooting at each other and shooting at us or me. The dirtiest little trick we play on the poor Afghan people is this happy talk, this PR bubble that bursts when you get on the ground. The reality of the situation is there are a lot of people with a lot of guns and a lot of gripes, and you got to overcome that. So I don't think you're ever going to return to the 70s. You're not going to return to the 70s here. I don't care how many Mad Men shows you put on TV. We're not going back to the 70s or the 50s or the 60s.
John Sopko is Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction since July of 2012. He heads back there later this month. Mr. Sopko, thanks so much.
It is a pleasure.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.